some reason, we got sold a bill of goods, and people believe that life is supposed to be fair, and it's not. Life isn't fair. It's what you do with it that matters.
In this week's edition of Know Them from Adam, we are joined by the former number two overall pick from the 1998 NFL draft, Ryan Leaf. People have certain ideas of who Ryan Leaf is, but they are totally different from the man that he actually is today. Earlier this month, Leaf was on hand in Indianapolis at the scouting combine, brought in by the NFL along with former NFL quarterbacks Chad Pennington and Mark Brunell to work with this year's group of quarterbacks in the upcoming draft. The idea was to listen to the words and wisdom of some of the men who lived the life that these young quarterbacks one day hope to live. Of course, people think of Leaf in a certain way. They do not know his own personal story of painkillers, a suicide attempt, imprisonment, and of course, a job that led him today to Transcend Recovery Community, which is a sober living environment in Los Angeles, New York, and Houston. The work Leaf does today is so different than what people would expect. And he finally is making a name for himself 19 years after the San Diego Chargers picked him one slot after Peyton Manning went number one. We'll get to Ryan Leaf in just a second, but first, today's Know Them from Adam is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options, so you can choose what fits your needs. And there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/AS. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/AS. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Thanks very much for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Of course.
You know, listen, when you came over to me in Indianapolis, number one, that was the first time that we've ever met in person.
Right.
And number two, it was so surprising to see that you were there. Like, I wasn't expecting to see you in Indianapolis.
Well, I don't think a lot of people were. I don't think I was expecting to see myself there when the NFL brought it up, you know, to start doing some of these things. And, you know, there was anxiety behind it for me, but that's all in my brain. You know, that's just fear in my brain. It's never like that. It's always great.
Well, for those who don't know, you worked at the combine with the quarterbacks. What advice did you give them about how to handle this process?
Well, Chad and I and Mark were just there to kind of be a support staff. We didn't want to get in their way because this was essentially their biggest job interview they've ever had so far. And so we wanted to be there to support them if they had any questions. The biggest piece of advice I gave guys was the understanding that you may be a great football player, but that doesn't make you a great person. You have to truly work on that like you've worked on being a great football player. And hopefully that came across. That's the biggest thing I could impart on somebody to move forward in a positive way.
I'm sure they heard that message, but did they really listen to that message, Ryan?
Well, I don't know if I would have. So, but I can't control that. You know, I have to stay out of the result. I only can do my part. And my part was being of service to young men who were trying to accomplish a dream they've had since they were very, very little, like me. And so I just do my part. And if one of them does take that input and apply it to their lives, that's the best I can do.
Did any of them know who you were or what your story is?
You know, I don't know if they really did. If they're real football geeks kind of like I was growing up, that I'm sure they do. But I don't know if necessarily it was the point. I think a lot of times when you stand in front of somebody and say you were the second pick in the NFL draft, that gets a little bit of attention, and because they're all striving for something like that. And so they may have listened a little bit more, but in my case back then, I would have looked at something as, oh, this will never happen to me. I'm going to be a guy that plays 15, 18 years in the league, which is where I was at the time. And I think the understanding that that it didn't work out the way I thought it would, and it lasted a lot shorter than I anticipated it, is an important message to show these guys who are just, you know, trying to break into this league.
Yeah. We're going to get to what you're doing with your life and all that you've been able to overcome. But for those that don't know, 19 years ago, when we were leading up to the draft process, you and Peyton Manning were regarded as the top two players in that draft. And I think there were teams, actually, who had you rated above Peyton Manning. There were teams that had Peyton Manning rated above you. When you look back on it now, the 19 years, and what it was like leading up to that draft, what goes through your mind when you know that you and Peyton Manning were the two top prospects coming out in that draft?
Well, it's a great compliment, knowing what we know now and the career that Peyton had. And I think a lot of people would agree with me that I was more talented. But all guys that get to that level who are being prepared to be a top draft pick are talented. It's what you do from Sunday to Sunday in between those ball games.
Yeah.
And his work ethic and his attention to detail just were superior to mine. Now, I could have worked on those things, and I did, but when things started to go poorly for me, I dove down instead of digging and preparing and being better. I tended to, you know, play the victim's role or blame others, where he simply was accountable for his actions and went out and prepared harder and harder. Of course, you wish you could have done things differently, but I had to learn a lesson, and it just was in a very public way, and it was in a humbling way, but it was what was best for me as a human being.
There was that one incident you had in which you were videotaped yelling at a reporter. The reporter was Jay Posner from the San Diego Union Tribune, and it's a famous clip that we've seen over and over on ESPN or wherever it may be. How did that one incident, that one confrontation, impact your career, Ryan?
Well, I kind of look back at it as a mark of demarcation for sure, where I felt like I turned inward and didn't allow anybody around me to help. I got very defensive, and I went after somebody like I'd done in the past. I would try to intimidate somebody because I wasn't capable of dealing with something in a positive way. And I really do think it affected my career greatly. The Kansas City game that led up to it, performance-wise, and then the way I dealt with it, the way I dealt with failure, rather than looking at it as an opportunity to get better and do it better the next time, I kind of was in the black and white. That's the way I looked at things, in black and white, rather than knowing there's a gray area where you can actually learn from these mistakes and improve. And it's a difficult lesson to learn, for sure.
Yeah.
But it was.
Well, you were the number two pick by the San Diego Chargers, by the way, one spot after Peyton Manning. And I want to go back to that for one moment. Do you have any kind of relationship with him even today, because you guys were so connected in that draft, and there's a part of you that will always be connected? Is there any relationship that exists between the two of you?
There is. Even when I was done playing and I was actually coaching in Texas, I would text him after our Saturday games and let him know how my quarterbacks did. His family was amazing to mine, especially when I, you know, started going down the wrong path and was getting in trouble. Olivia and Archie were always amazing to my folks.
Wow.
And I know one of them, I don't know which family member actually reached out to me while I was in prison, but we've been in contact recently, just for me to congratulate him on an amazing career. And, you know, he'd probably be the simplest person for me to be resentful of, but you know, I watched somebody who sacrificed and put everything he could into what he wanted to be, and you can't fault that at all. And I'm proud of him. I was very happy to see him right off in the sunset with that Super Bowl win over a year ago. And, you know, he's just an amazing man and a part of an amazing family for sure.
You touched on prison. Can you take us through the Ryan Leaf story? And I don't know where we begin with this, because obviously you've done a great job at overcoming so much and are so open to addressing it. And right now, and we'll get into this as well, you are the program ambassador for Transcend Recovery Community, which is a sober living environment in Los Angeles, New York, Houston areas. You've done so much, and you've turned all these things that have gone against you and times that weren't working for you into a positive. Where do we start with the Ryan Leaf story?
Well, I think that, you know, I don't know if my life really started until I was in a prison cell about 26 months in, when my roommate, who was a Afghan-Iraqi war vet, who had been an amazing roommate, came in one day and got after me pretty hard about me playing the victim and having my head buried in the sand, and how I didn't understand the value I had for not only the men in the facility I was in, but also to the people when I got out. Because he said, Ryan, you're going to get out at some point. And he said, what we're going to do today is we're going to go down to the library and we're going to help guys who don't know how to read learn how to read. And it was the first time in my life that I had ever been of service to anybody but myself. So I know what my new life looks like, and I can trace it back to that moment. Where things maybe started to go downhill for me was probably around 13 or 14 years old, when I got placed on a very high pedestal because I could play a sport well. And it wasn't just football. I was very good at basketball and baseball, and it was a small town. And I started looking in the mirror and going, I'm a great football player. I'm a great athlete, and that makes me better than you. And of course, that's not the case, but all those behaviors that I exhibited got overshadowed because I performed so well. And then it just kept going and going. And then when the spotlight was shined just as bright as could be at the highest level, you know, my character and integrity really got shown to the world. And it was probably my mom's worst fear, that she knew who I was. She saw the behaviors, but she was worried that the world was going to finally see how I behaved. And they did.
How much of that had to do with you being 21 years old and being handed basically $31 million in the contract?
Huge, because then I didn't have to be accountable to anybody, especially my parents, monetarily at least. I always had to put in some effort to listen to them while I was in college, because they were still helping me, you know, financially. But once you're independent enough and have that much money and feel like you have these three ideals that I thought were success, which was money, power, and prestige, when people said no to me, I actually just pushed them away rather than listen. And I surrounded myself with yes men and people who would just enable my behavior, and that was just a huge mistake.
So how do you go from being the number two pick in the draft to winding up in jail? How does that happen?
Well, it's not as far-fetched as you believe. I think people are, for some reason, are really surprised when you see star athletes crash and burn. Our personalities are made to be extreme, be eccentric, because we're doing something that 1% of the 1% of the population is able to do. You know, I wasn't supposed to make it to the NFL. I'm from a small town in Montana. No one's ever even been drafted in the first round from the whole state except me. There's more members of the Manning family drafted in the first round in the whole state of Montana. So for me to even be there was amazing. And so when we see people stumble and fall, it shouldn't be that big a surprise, but we've placed them on pedestals so much that it is a surprise in a way. And so for me, it was just being introduced to Vicodin while playing, with the orthopedic surgeries, the injuries from week to week. And when my career was over, I knew about this medication, and it helped alleviate that physical pain. And when I was in all this emotional and mental health pain, I resorted to numbing it with this opiate, and it worked for me. It doesn't work for some people. It worked for me. I was never a drug or alcohol guy. I didn't drink until 18. The only drug I've ever taken is Vicodin. And it still took me to the very bottom. Like you said, it took me to a prison cell on April 1st, 2012.
How did that happen that day? Like, what led to your arrest and to you to go to prison?
Well, it was leading up for a long period of time. I had relapsed after a little recovery back in 2011. And I was going to doctors, and when that stopped because they wouldn't give me pills anymore, I started behaving like a criminal, and I would go to friends' houses pretending to come say hi to them and go through their medicine cabinets, and eventually going to open houses pretending to be interested in buying their homes and going through their medicine cabinets until I could get those pills in my hand. And the shame of it was debilitating, but like I said, as soon as those pills were in my hand, everything dissipated. Everything just was alleviated, and it's just a clear sign of what the obsession of opiate painkillers can do to your brain. I mean, I hadn't been involved with the law in my life, and I still was willing to just do these things that were against all actual morals that I was raised with.
So you go to prison for using and stealing Vicodin, I guess. How do you break that habit while you're in prison to that addiction?
Well, lucky for me, I was arrested, and then I was segregated to a isolation cell where I was placed in isolation because how they termed it, for my safety. I didn't quite understand that part of it, but I was not able to get drugs. So first of all, there has to be some intervening process that stops you from using. And the idea, the chemical doesn't leave your brain for almost 2 years, they say, scientifically. So that wasn't it. And then while in prison, you know, I wasn't in a good place. Like I said, it took 26 months into that 32-month stint where I wasn't self-loathing or blaming others or still not able to look myself in the mirror and hold myself accountable. So doing that over time, it removes itself. And I don't know why I didn't use drugs in prison. They're readily available. Mm-hmm. I was just done, I think. I can't explain it. All I know is that I was done. Yep. In my mind at that point. But I knew when I got out that if I didn't go seek treatment, those behaviors, that muscle memory would return. So once leaving prison, I had to go seek treatment, and that's what I did.
Was there a low moment that you had during the course of your addiction or being in prison, a single time that you hit rock bottom, truly?
Well, I think it was, you know, the day before I went to prison, I couldn't get any more pills because I had just been arrested 2 days prior, and it was just a real focus. And I thought to myself that I either had to be dead or high, and I couldn't be high. So I started looking up ways on the internet to kill myself. I walked into the bathroom and I slipped my left wrist, and it didn't work. I still have the scar here on my left wrist, so I can see it every day. And then I raced out of the house when that didn't work and tried to go to my parents' house and park in the garage and do it that way. But for some reason, they were home. They weren't supposed to be. They were supposed to be taking care of my grandparents because, of course, their eldest grandson had embarrassed the family again. But for whatever reason, they were there. And I immediately pulled the U-turn and found a home that I knew had some pills. I walked in and I took them and I had them in my hand and I got caught. The sheriff's department showed up that night and took me back to jail, and I didn't get out again, like I said, until April 1st or until December 3rd, 2014.
So is it fair to say, Ryan, that going to prison actually saved your life?
Yes, by far the best example of that. I didn't know or feel like I'd ever be grateful for that. But I can look at it now as gratitude. Now, I don't recommend that for the justice system. I don't think that nonviolent drug offenders should be in a prison. I think they should be in some kind of treatment facility. And I'm a big advocate for that. But in my case, I do believe that the circumstances that led up to it, the intervention, and then the roommate that I got, and the mind shift that came with being of service while in there was amazing for my transformation, for sure.
How tough is all this reliving all of your darkest moments? I mean, it's really incredible to think about everything that you've been through. How hard is it to do that?
You know, it's. I don't mean to minimize it at all, because it was very impactful to not only my family, but others that supported me. But I really look at it now like it was a rough patch I had to get through. My story isn't different or more important than anybody else's who has struggled with things in life. Life is life. You know, for some reason, we got sold a bill of goods, and people believe that life is supposed to be fair, and it's not. Life isn't fair. It's what you do with it that matters. And figuring that out is half the battle. I don't mind telling the story, because this has nothing to do with me. This is about the person who still struggles and needs to hear something that resembles what they're going through and knows that there's a light out of that darkness. That's what we do when we develop this acceptance and surrender in this program. We carry our message to other struggling human beings and practice all these principles in our affairs. That's all we can do, all we can control. And understanding that I'm not the center of it, this has nothing to do with me, is huge for my ego, because that was always a problem.
When you walked out of prison in December of 2014, Ryan, what did you think was next for you?
I didn't know. I was scared. I was broke. I was going to go live on mom and dad's couch. I was hoping I could get the treatment immediately, but because of red tape in the parole system, seeking treatment isn't normally what a person does when they leave prison, apparently. So it took us 90 days to get the okay, and there was an easy opportunity to relapse there, I think, because the negative feelings. But for some reason, I had that mind shift, and I was, you know, repairing a relationship with my parents. The self-esteem took a hit, though, because I was living on their couch and I was being fed by them, even though it was a very nurturing moment for both of them. And once I got accepted to the treatment facility in California, and I'll make this point too, I wouldn't have been able to go to treatment if it weren't for the NFL grants that were available to me for former players, because I couldn't afford it. Wow. So by being available to me for that, I was able to seek out treatment. And I went there for 90 days to build that foundation. Though I was 32 months sober, it was important for me to still build that foundation.
So how do you get to where you are with Transcend Recovery Community? How does that happen?
Well, while I was in treatment there, a young man came by to take another client that I was in treatment with on a tour of a sober living environment. And I asked him where he worked, and he said Transcend Recovery Community. So in that process, I reached out to their CEO and COO for information and to let them know I was interested in doing something like this, of being a service. And I remember my friend Christian, who's, you know, my business partner now, I kept bothering him. He was in New York working, and I kept bothering him. And he tells a story that when he called and talked to his boss, he was like, I got this guy who keeps bugging me for a job. You know what's hilarious? He's got the same name as that football player. And so he calls me back up and he says, can you send me a resume? And I said, sure. And then I hung up the phone and I was like, I've never made a resume in my life. I'm 38 years old, and I've never made a resume. So I went on resumebuilder.com and I built one out, and I had to put like former profession, professional athlete, company, National Football League. Well, when I sent it to him, he saw it. He's like, oh my God. And he's a sports fan, and he brought me in for an interview and wanted to see if I was really, you know, serious about this. And he placed me in one of their homes to be a driver. I drove guys from therapy sessions to meetings, and was just a support staff. And I did that for like 5 months. And then he saw a bigger picture. He saw my story being more impactful, and he asked me if I'd come on as their program ambassador. So that promotion led to me being able to travel around the country and tell my story and try to impact people and help them get into substance abuse and mental health treatment.
And that's what you're doing today?
Yes, sir.
And do you think that your message is being heard? Do you feel like when you get done with your job that you're reaching people that need to be reached?
We're receiving a ton of, you know, correspondence, and this all started too when I took on that job. I was still very nervous about going back out into the public eye, and I went to Super Bowl 50 in San Francisco, and the first true piece of media I did was with the Dan Patrick Show, and I went on there, and I was just transparent and vulnerable and honest, and the first validation came immediately. About a day later, my parents called me and said there was a young man who I grew up playing basketball with and was from a neighboring town near where I grew up, and he had called my parents and told them that after hearing me on the show, he admitted he had a problem. He talked with his family and went to treatment, and I think when he talked to him, last time I talked to him, he was almost, he's coming up on a year and a half sober now. So
great.
Yeah, that's the validation, and it's coming in troves now too, with the other things we're doing. So like I said before, I try to stay out of the result because the only thing I can do is control my part in it. But it's validating to see people who truly want to change their lives, change them.
Did you ever think this would be your purpose in life? This?
Oh, hell no. Are you kidding me? I thought I was going to play 20 years, win multiple Super Bowls, but the hilarious thing about all this is that if that would have happened,
yeah,
I would have just been a ass with Super Bowl rings. That's what it would have been. You know, that's an important way to look at it. And the impact that I'll have because of all the struggles I've gone through is so more important. It really is, because all that would have been about me, and this is all about service. So it's important to remember that.
So your life is very different today at age 40 than what you thought it would have been when you were the number two pick 19 years ago.
Of course, but I also was naive. You know, going to prison also marginalized me, and I had never been marginalized in my life. It opened my eyes. It gave me new perspective of those who have struggled and gone through the things they've gone through. You know, it was the first time I had to truly be tested, I think. You know, all the other stuff was, you know, show. And I was truly tested, and I can actually walk around right now and hold my head up high and my chest out and say, I'm a tough son of a to go through this and come out. And it's about getting up, you know. It really is. And I try to express that all the time when I speak to people.
There can't be many people who attempt to take their life, who go to prison, who are fighting an addiction, who come out broke and wind up on their feet trying to influence others in a positive way, the way that you're doing now. I tip my cap to you. I really do.
I think there's a lot more than I think you'd be surprised on how many people have gone through this process and came out the other end a better person. I really do. I just sometimes the fact that I, you know, was the second pick in the draft and played in the NFL and stumbled so publicly, it gets our foot in the door maybe a little bit easier. But I tell you what, some of the men and women that tell me their stories are, it's amazing. And it's important to be able to listen to all of them and understand that, again, my story isn't unique in any way. It's not more or less important than anybody else's. It's just a way of giving back.
All right, Ryan, let's take a little break here. And when we come back, I want to ask you your thoughts on Johnny Manziel. Today's Nolan from Adam is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. It's the new year, which means a fresh start for your business. And a great year starts with making great hires. But posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter, you can jumpstart your hiring in 2017. Post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/football. That's ZipRecruiter.com/football. One more time to try for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/football.
You bring up reaching others.
And I'm just curious to know whether you've ever reached out to Johnny Manziel or he's ever reached out to you, or if you've ever had any kind of contact with him.
We did. We reached out to him, and we haven't heard anything back. I have been in contact with his father, which has been awesome, and he tells me that John is doing really well right now, and it was a struggle for a long time, as everybody saw, of course. And the only thing I can do is offer my support and for him to know that I'm here if he ever needs anything. That's all I can do, and I feel good because I'm doing my part. That's all we can do.
When you saw the videos of him surfacing, the tweets online, some of the behavior that came out in public, what did you think as you watched him?
It was like I was holding up a mirror. I mean, if they would have had social media, Twitter, Instagram and stuff, those 2 years after I retired, when I was trying to be that person, those ideals of money, power, and prestige, it would look very similar. I was on private planes. I was on yachts. I had to make everybody believe that everything was okay. You know, as long as I had my money, that was important, and it made everything okay. So I like to use that analogy, and I use it a lot with anybody. When a behavior is exhibited, I always say, you know, I'm looking right at myself because that's how I behave, and it's still how I behave. I am aware of it now, and I have, you know, healthy tools to correct it. You know, I'm not perfect. This is progress. This isn't perfection. I behaved a certain way for 38 years, and you know, heck, it may take me 38 more years to figure it out. So, you know, around 76, I might have this thing lit.
Yeah, but you're going to be a dad this fall, right?
Yes, sir.
And that's going to change you a little bit. That's going to change you more than you even realize.
It is, and I can tell you something. When I walked out of that prison cell, when I knew I was going to make a change, I still, in my mind, did not want to give a child my last name. I still had a lot of shame around it, and I was worried about how that child would get treated. So I was adamant about not having a child. And when my fiance told me, she said, I had a smile on my face that she'd never even seen before. And I think that was very apropos of where I was at that moment and where I'm at now, 4 months since then, knowing that 5 months from now, my life is going to change in a way that I never thought possible. And I couldn't be happier about it.
What are your expectations about being a father, Ryan?
I have a lot of education to pass along. I do that. I have a lot of life experience for a 40-year-old. And I'm just going to try, you know, to do what my parents did, because they did a great job. And I understand that my thinking about, you know, doing what I can control, I can impart my wisdom and show them the best possible way. But human beings are going to make their own decisions, and I have to be their supporter. That's the thing about my parents, my two brothers. They're the only four in my life that unconditionally love me, no matter what. They didn't care if I ever played football or I was a millionaire or anything. They just wanted me to be peaceful and happy, and they supported me through thick and thin. I mean, they did, even when I pushed them away. I didn't talk to either one of my brothers the whole time I was in prison. I only talked to my parents, you know, every now and then. And they still were right there, but they did, you know, they did make a point. They're not enabling my behavior. They'll support me in anything I want to do in my recovery, but they're not going to enable that behavior that they did for so long while I was growing up.
It's amazing. If we had this Ryan Leaf back when you were 21 years old, how good you could have been.
I don't like looking at it that way. Like we talked about earlier, that's, you know, those are scenarios that,
yeah.
Like I said, I don't know if I had that in me, you know, period. I had to be humbled in a way where I woke up on a prison cell floor. It just had to happen that way. And I'm grateful for it. And it gives me an opportunity now just to be a better human being, because we're all flawed human beings, and we're just trying to be better on a daily basis. And if you have the choice to do something in a positive way or a negative way, and you choose that positive way over and over, good things will happen. I just happen to choose the negative negative way for so long, and it just caught up with me.
Ryan, you brought up the concern that you had with your child having your last name. What do you feel about the last name Leaf now?
It's my father's name. It's my grandfather's name. And it's special, and it's important, and it has nothing to do with me. It's what they paved the way for. And what I do now is going to be the same thing. So that was a selfish way to look at things, because it's my father's name. It's my two brothers' name, who are amazing young men. And it's my grandfather's name. And that's important to remember, that that narcissistic feeling I had in myself, that was all selfless and not real.
Congratulations on everything that you've done, Ryan. I think it's remarkable. Everybody knew that you were going to do remarkable things. They just didn't expect them to be these remarkable things.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to do it on a daily basis. It's, you know, it's routine. I think that's what makes recovery possible for former athletes. We are regimented. You know, we have itineraries. We have a calendar. We get up, we do it. My day exists for me to function at a high level, and that's up early in the gym, at work. You know, 180-degree lifestyle change for sure. There's therapy, there's meetings, there's working with others. Anytime I can be of service or ask to be of service is what I do. So it fits my lifestyle. It truly does.
Is it still a struggle?
The substance, no. I don't think about the substance anymore. But behaviorally, you know, when I speak to groups of people, I start my speech off with, I was a drug addict long before I ever took a drug, because I know how drug addicts behave now and how I behaved. And those behaviors were exhibited very young in my life. And so those still creep up, you know, the dishonesty, the embellishment of stories, the isolation, behaviors that I am aware of. But I have people around me now that hold me accountable for that, because I've asked them to, because a lot of times I can't see it because it's muscle memory. So I'm always worried about those behaviors. The difference now is that I'm aware of them and made aware of them, and I can take action and recover from them in a timely manner. Before, it was like delusion. I didn't believe it existed, and I thought I was always right. I can admit when I'm wrong now, and that's a huge part of that accountability piece.
I hope that the quarterbacks in Indianapolis at the combine earlier this month listened to you and listened hard to you. I really do, because it sounds like you've learned an awful lot.
Well, that's my hope, and that's what I believe the NFL is trying to do here with the NFL Legends program, where we bring, you know, the former players together to be a utility for these young men coming into the league, because we know how special it is. And I think I took that for granted for a long time and stayed away from it for a long time after I retired too, because I was so angry, fearful, and worried of judgment that I stayed away when my therapist and I formed this affirmation we use all the time, and I use it on a daily basis now. And it's what other people think of me is none of my business. And I say it in the mirror every morning, and it's taken a long time to get to that point, but it's very important to understand it.
What other people think of me is none of my business?
Yes, sir.
Those are good words to live by.
Yes, they are. I wish I would have utilized those a lot earlier in life.
Those words could apply to a lot of people in life. A lot of people could take those words and that wisdom to heart.
It is. We take things so personally, and then if we just use that part, it's that control piece. I have a disease that removes so much control from my life, and the idea that I have control under of making decisions on whether to deal with something positive or negative is freeing for me, for sure, because I have to relinquish a ton of control when it comes to decision-making and things like that, because my best thinking took me to a prison cell. So I have like a group of board of directors, five guys that I go to who mentor me, that I put decisions in front of them, and I get a vote, and I'm the chairman of the board, and I make the final decision. But like I said, you know, my best thinking in life, you know, ran me out of the NFL and put me in a prison cell. So it's important to remember that.
Ryan, before we let you go, I believe you have a foundation with the Transcend Recovery Community. Is there anything that you want to say to people out there who are struggling today about the help they can get?
Yeah, for sure. If there's anybody out there who in the moment right now is struggling and just needs to reach out and tell somebody that they need help, you can reach us at transcendrc.com. That's for transcendrecoverycommunity.com. And we have people there all the time to answer your questions and help you. And you don't have to commit to anything. If you just want to call, tell someone that you're struggling and you need help, heck, if you need to reach out to me personally, direct message me on Twitter at Ryan D. Leaf. I get messages from people all the time, and I get them in contact with the people they need. As for my foundation, it's called the Focused Intensity Foundation, focusedintensity.org. It was started to raise money for scholarships for people who can't afford substance abuse and mental health treatment. And like I told you earlier, if I hadn't been available for those, if those grants from the NFL hadn't been available to me, I wouldn't have been able to get the treatment that I needed. And I don't want anybody ever who truly wants to seek treatment and change their lives not be able to get it because they couldn't afford it.
Ryan, thank you so much for that message, for the time that you've provided today, for the hope that you've provided to others. I really do appreciate it. I am really glad that you came over to me at the Starbucks in Indianapolis and introduced yourself. That was a great moment.
I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done that 2 years ago. I simply wouldn't have. I would have turned my head away going, oh, they're probably just, what is he doing here? And, you know, Adam, it's about showing up. It just really is. It's about showing up these days and being there, being present. And I'm really happy I did too, because it was an honor meeting you and getting to know you.
The honor's mine, Ryan. Thank you very much for everything.
Thank you, sir.
Some people still don't get podcasts, why they're special, and how to listen. You can help change that with a click. Right now, think of someone you care about. What podcast would they really love? Got it? Now do it. Hit the share button on the bottom left of your screen. If they don't know how to listen, offer to show them how. Tell us what you shared with the hashtag TryPod. TRY Pod. Thanks for spreading the word.